the buzzer, McCord on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get it. No timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
You're darn right. It's Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. I'm Dan Dockage, Seth Greenberg, two-time ACC Coach of the Year. And, of course, the coach whisperer. When coaches have problems, the first number they call is Seth Greenberg. We're going to give you everything we got today. Like we do every day, Seth Greenberg was there. It was the Champions Classic, 1 versus 2, 3 versus 4. Seth, I'm going to throw this out before I throw it to you. I say it all the time. I'm going to say it again. If you can't shoot, you can't win in college basketball. Kansas couldn't shoot. Michigan State couldn't shoot. I got to also say this. You know we love us some Izzo. You know we love us some Michigan State. But if Michigan State's the number one team in the country, that's the weakest number one team in the country I can remember in my life, and I'm 57 years old. What did you think of the Champions Classic?
It's early in the season. The defense is ahead of the offense. That team's obviously struggled shooting. But I mean, Kansas, they couldn't throw the ball to the right team. Someone needs to tell Kansas the colored uniform that they were wearing, because to me, that was a concern. When you play those two bigs together, it's an issue, I think. And look, they didn't handle the post doubles. They didn't handle the ball pressure. You got to give Duke a little bit of that credit. But, you know, when I look overall, I took away, and everyone's like complaining, well, you know, you got these great games, Champions Classic. These teams don't have any games underneath their belt. It's terrible. I think the only problem I have with the Champions Classic, if you're going to play the Champions Classic, let it stand on a day by itself, not a day that's 140 other games, and have that at the start of the college basketball season. Or then, if not that, then play it 2 weeks down the line where maybe the quality of play is going to be better. But look, you've got good teams, great programs, great traditions, Hall of Fame coaches, Tyrese Maxey on the at the world's most famous arena, stepped up and made big plays for Kentucky. The Duke guys have a different DNA now. Their DNA is on the defensive end. I think they've got some versatility in their lineup, but I'm not sure they have they don't have a generational type player on their roster. Kansas should have been better. They weren't. I was disappointed with the way they played. And then Michigan State, they need someone else who will put the ball on the floor, make a play, and score a bucket besides Cassius Winston, because Cassius Winston's coming off those ball screens. I thought Nick Richards was great, strung him out, used his size and all that. And I'm not sure Cassius got a ton of help.
I thought Cassius got no help. And I didn't think there was anywhere in that game that anybody was going to help. Nobody was making shots, right wing, left wing, top of the key. I said this last week. I'm telling you, that Goins, Kenny Goins' kid, made a big difference in Michigan State last year, and so did McQuaid, man. Kenny Goins and McQuaid are missed, and we saw it in the first week. I would argue, if I were Indiana or if I were Virginia, I would argue your point about Champions Classic standing alone. Now, as an ESPN guy, I want Champions Classic standing alone. But I would say if I were Virginia or I were UConn or I were teams that won a national championship, Seth, I would say to hell with those four programs. Start, you know, that's a made-for-TV deal. Y'all start when you want. We're starting when we want. That would be my argument against the Champions Classic standing alone as its own game. You know, if I were one of those teams,
I totally agree with that. I mean, like, you know, like, wait a second here. I mean, do the rest of us exist?
Right.
But if we're trying to promote the game, and look, let's face it. I mean, there were 140 some games that night. Everyone's eyes. There was no other game, or there was no other classic that even compared to what right. happened that night. Now, the ACC started their league play. And that was interesting, no doubt about it. And you know, everyone's up in arms about, oh, how can you start a league game? These games are important. They're the same for both teams. Like both of the ACC teams that started, you know, their season yesterday and the day prior, right? They had the same number of practices. It was the same for both teams. So like, it is what it is. They're playing 20 league games. Coaches would rather play those games with fans in the stands than over the winter break. So like, enough is enough. I mean, yeah, if you're going to play a 20 league game schedule, you're going to have your own network. You have to put those games somewhere. It's a good way to start your league season in terms of bring attention to your league and attention to what you're doing in the football season. It is what it is. But I'll tell you one thing. One of those dudes that started their season, Cole Anthony, it didn't bother him.
Didn't bother him at all. He had 34. I'm going to address one thing you just said. People are going to complain no matter what, right? I mean, you could. We've learned in our society today, people are going to whine and moan no matter what. So you can't even pay attention to anybody complaining. But Cole Anthony, son of Greg Anthony, lit it up, Seth. All right, here's what I've always said. And I experienced this as a player, and I used to talk to players about this at Indiana. You know, you come out and you practice every day at the Dean Dome. You practice every day in Assembly Hall. You practice every day Mackey Arena, wherever, Castle Coliseum. And all of a sudden you come out in a game day, and it's a totally different look in the arena. And the band is in there. The bleachers are pulled out. There's not eight baskets there. It's just a total different look. Cole Anthony, last night as a freshman with 34, didn't care. Even a little bit. And he didn't drop 34 against six hyphens. He dropped 34 against Notre Dame in his first conference game, Seth. That is unheard of. Is he the new Zion Williamson? Can we have an overreaction podcast here and say he's the new Zion?
Wait a second. I mean, I'm in Alaska now, so I'm hanging out with a couple of moose right here sitting in my room and everything. And, you know, I'll probably go, you know, ice fishing in a little later or something. But, you know, like to me, I think Get Up is on. I'm sure that you know, someone is pontificating about Cole Anthony and what he did. Look, the kid, he made plays off the bounce. He had a runner. He shot threes. He took big shots. He made big shots. Like Tyrese Maxey had 26 the other night. He made some big shots, especially that three down the stretch. I mean, he was really, really good. But Cole Anthony did it the whole 40 minutes. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think, and I really believe this, like, I'm Cole Anthony. I'm watching Champions Classic the day before. And I see Tyrese Maxey go off, right? You know, the other freshmen that people are talking about are the best players in the country, the best teams. And, like, I got to believe just in the society we live in, that man, like, Cole Anthony's sitting there going, man, are you kidding me? Wait till tomorrow. They put me on that stage. Wait till tomorrow. So no one can guard me. I can get the ball anywhere I want, anytime I want it. I can make any play. I'm going to have the ball in my hands. I've got absolutely the green light. Coby White started it. Like, you think of Carolina point guards. You think the Carolina point guards pushing it, making plays for other people, getting in the lane. They didn't have real ball guards, really, Carolina. Now, after Coby White, I think Roy Williams said, you know what, I can have a point guard that can be almost a score first, attack first, make plays. Yeah, I got to be unselfish. I got to make the right play. But you know what? I can play through this guy, and he can be my best offensive weapon. What do you think of that?
If you don't, you're making a mistake. I mean, right? I mean, Roy Williams is, I think, arguably the best coach that you're going to find, or as good as any. And I think he found a guy. He let him play 37 minutes. Seth, one thing I would so agree with you on, and it's amazing the talent that a kid could go ahead and do it. But Anthony watching Maxey, I think, is a great comment, because you're sitting there watching a guy, and all these kids know each other. All these kids are buddies. All these kids came up together, and you're sitting there going, man, I got tomorrow to prove myself. I got tomorrow for my coming out party. And then to be good enough to do it. Like, that's the thing, to be good enough as a freshman, because I don't know, you know, Mike Bray's team is usually old and stays old and all that kind of stuff, but to be good enough to come out in the Dean Dome and knock in 34, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, dominate. I mean, I'm talking about dominate the entire game. I mean, it's one thing to say it, and we all know that kids today and adults today, we all know what to say, and you know, but to go out and do it was fascinating. Hey, I do want to talk about Virginia, though, before we get to Chris Beard, because Virginia went into Syracuse. The least amount of points Syracuse has scored since Jim Boeheim was 6 months old. Did you know that? 6 months old. Jim Boeheim's old as dirt. 34, least amount. To me, I don't see a pro on Syracuse. And to me, you can talk about losing the three guys last year from Virginia, but you still got to deal with Tony Bennett. And that's a lot to deal with, Seth.
Yeah. I mean, look, again, Virginia is always going to be built on the defensive end first. But again, this game, and look, Syracuse is retooling them, and they've got some guys. Buddy Byham is going to be better, and Elijah Hughes is going to be better. And, you know, the kid, Vernon, the point guard. Right. Obviously really, really struggled. So Look, it's one game, but Virginia's going to be good. Mamadi Diakite is going to have a not a good year, but a breakout year. And right now, obviously, that's not the game you want to open up the season with to play against that defense. You know, the one thing, Casey Morcell is obviously a really good defender, and Jay Huff gave him some offense. But their game is going to be ugly, Dan.
People have complained about Virginia for years. Virginia's going to win like 28 games, and people are going to bitch about every one of them. You know what I mean?
Well, you play the way you give your teams the best chance to win.
Why would you ever worry about anything external if you're Tony Bennett or anybody inside that UVA program? You don't worry about anything external. You don't worry about anybody talking, anybody saying. The system is the system. It's motion. It's movement. It's knowing how to play. It's helping each other. And it's getting in a stance and guarding and getting in the help side and then finishing it all with a blockout. And I don't know how anybody can complain about that. I don't.
No turnovers, no transition baskets, right. No second shots. They get the shot they want. You don't get the shot you want. It's always contested. What is wrong with that?
I don't know. First time, listen to this. I mean, first time since 1967 that a defending champ has had to go on the road. Last time was UCLA going to Purdue. How about that? I mean, that's that ACC schedule you were talking about, Seth. And Virginia, hey, if you get 60 against Virginia, it's going to be interesting. I'm curious. I'm going to kind of track this all year. How many teams are going to get 60 against Virginia? Will anybody get 70 against Virginia? I assume somebody will. But I'm telling you right now, I watched some of that last night. That's just a lockdown team. And that Kahari Clark, I mean, that dude had 11 rebounds. He's the littlest guy in the court.
I'll tell you, Kia Clark, I'll tell you the other thing is if you run just plays against Virginia.
Oh, you got no chance.
All right. You're not scoring because they're if they can scout you and know exactly point A to point B and take you out of what you – they're going to take you out of what you want to do. Now, if you run motion, which is more spontaneous and read and react, and now all of a sudden they can't just lock in to a set, it's a little bit more difficult. Because, Coach Beard, what did you drop on Virginia in the championship game?
I don't remember the exact number, but it felt like about 38 points.
That's some.
Welcome in, Chris Beard here to the podcast.
He scored 77.
See, that's
77. Yeah. We were just talking about how, like, Virginia, how many times will they give up more than 60 this year? Probably not many, right?
I'd say you could do it on one hand, Coach.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. How about Coach Beard visiting us this morning? Hey, Coach, all right, what you have done is absolutely incredible. And I always say it's your background, it's your journey, it's your perseverance that enables you to do what you do. Your experience of your ability to connect with players and get, you know, see the best in them and get them to compete and get them to trust each other. How much is it also your background of, you know, having to rebuild your team every single year, whether it was in junior college or Division II? How has that helped you get where you are right now?
For me personally, Coach, it's been everything. You know, I wouldn't trade my journey for any other journey. You know, we tell the players all the time, live where your feet are, run your own race. A really good coach told me that one. And we've been taught our guys that a lot lately. But, you know, for me, coaching at different levels and coming up the way I did, I think it just gives me a greater appreciation and maybe a little bit more urgency than the next guy.
Hey, Chris, when you look back, have you taken time? I mean, I know you got beat. Okay, Virginia got you last year, national championship game. Was there a point this summer where you sat back with maybe a bourbon and a cigar and said, damn, that's pretty good? Or is it like most other things? Like to this day, I still go to bed thinking about four losses 35, 40 years later. Or is it like, you know, the other way? Damn, we should have done this or should have done that. Did you ever, which way did you go this summer?
Well, first of all, Coach, bourbon and cigar, no, more like a Coors Light and a Whataburger.
All right.
Kind of the way we roll.
But, okay. All right. I figure you make like $5 million a year, you get a big old cigar and a bourbon. I mean, you know, back in your junior college days, maybe a Coors Light and a Whataburger. I figured you went big time.
Yeah, I used to say the best kind of beer was free beer, but now I've been blessed, so I really don't need the free beer. Now I need the cold beer. But no, it's a good question. Every time I'm asked it, I try to be as transparent and as real as I can. I really haven't reflected much. Just like most coaches, I don't ever watch that last game. I've always had a plan that one day I'll watch it when we win the last game. So this summer I started with our journey video-wise, watching the Michigan State game and going all the way back to the first game of the year, Incarnate Word. But I've yet to watch that Virginia game. And I don't really plan on watching it until we win it all one day. But I think really one time coaching kind of hit through just seeing those five seniors. You know, every senior we have is on an NBA contract, either an NBA or a G League. So to see those guys chase their dream and all be here in the States playing in front of their families right now, that was one moment that kind of made me reflect on how special last season was.
Coach, I had a chance to spend time with you, and the thing I was most impressed with was your messaging to your team and how connected you are and your staff is to your team. And, you know, in that visit, you talked about, you know, Coach Saban, Nick Saban, and the impact he's had on you. Kind of explain how that, I wouldn't say it's an infatuation, but how his journey and how his approach has impacted what you're doing.
Yeah, it is borderline infatuation, Coach. Most people sit around and Google and stuff at night. I pretty much can tell you everything about Alabama football and Texas Tech football. Those are the two I follow. But just started for me growing up as a kid. I was a little bit more of a football guy than even basketball. Just where I grew up in Irving, that's what we played. And it was a big part of my childhood football, so I've always loved it. And just a few years ago, I just tried to get everything I could get my hands on about Coach Saban, not only at Alabama, but you know, Michigan State, LSU, the NFL. And then just really the idea of the process really hit home, you know, not necessarily coaching based on outcomes and the end of the journey, but more day-to-day process. Let's control what we can control. We'd always kind of had an approach like that, but I wasn't as smart or as good a verbalizer as Coach was. So then this summer, I've actually had a great opportunity to go down there and spend some time and not only Coach, but everybody on their staff, from their ops guys to the coordinators. I just spent 2 days and had some access and took advantage of it. And so my opinion of Alabama football leaving Tuscaloosa was even higher than when I arrived. I think that simply stated they're some of the best at what they do.
Coach, has anything changed relative to recruiting for you after last year?
It has, Coach. To say it hadn't wouldn't be accurate. It, you know, there's just a few more doors that open. I think whether we can, you know, close those deals and sign those players is kind of yet to be determined. But we're definitely recruiting a different player this year's class. I can't talk about it, of course, with the NCAA rules. But we have some commitments we're really proud of and guys that I think will be able to play early and well at this level. But there's no question the success translates to, I would say, more opportunities. But does it translate to just getting the job done? I think too early to tell.
In that frame, you've won with a certain type of guy. Like, you've won with a guy with a little bit of a chip. You've got one with a guy that feels like he has to prove something, that 100% has to buy in and allow himself to be coached. I mean, what your staff does, breaking down every single play of every single practice and then teaching through film, do you worry about, like, all right, we're going to recruit the very best players because, you know, we need good players, but we also got to recruit guys that are the best players that get what we're all about. Is that ever a concern for you?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know if worry is the best word, but definitely focus on that. See, I don't think, you know, we have a thing we say, never lose your chip. And got that from Coach Sampson, somebody I look up to and my good friend. You know, street dog mentality was kind of last year's label, but it's all the same thing. It's about never being satisfied. It's about never forgetting where you're from. It's about having an expectation for yourself that's higher than anybody else could put on you. Whether you call that don't lose your chip or street dog or underdog, whatever you want to call it. But I don't think it has anything to do with one star versus five star. I think you can find a five star player that has that chip. You know, he's trying to prove to everybody he wants to be the number one pick. Or you could take a no-star player that has that chip and he's trying to prove that he can play at this level. So I think what we look for is that hunger. And we look for that, you know, basically just addiction to basketball and addiction to winning. That's a word that I kind of came across this offseason. We've been using, like, you know, everybody says love of the game. I think that's kind of a given. I mean, if we're recruiting guys that don't love the game, then we're not recruiting well. But that next level is just guys that are addicted to the process, addicted to the game, want to get better, can't get enough of it. These are the kind of guys that we love to coach.
Yeah, that's what Izzo was talking about on our show a few weeks ago. He was talking about guys that live it, man. It's just inside them. He was talking about Langford being that kind of kid. Not just, hey, you know, I got to practice, but it's me. It's who I am. How easy is it to find kids like this?
I wouldn't say it's easy, coach, but it's possible. I always thought in recruiting, like, you know, I tell the guys, like, anybody can make a right decision. You just have to have the information to make that right decision. And I think a lot of times in recruiting, you know, like Coach always says, it's kind of a fact-finding mission in recruiting as well. And, you know, that the information's out there. I mean, if you ask an AAU coach exactly how the kid was or a high school coach, most people, more than not, are going to tell you the truth. And especially if you develop relationships, I mean, you're going to get the information. It's just a matter of working on it. And what we try to find, you know, probably above everything else, of course, it's talent. No question about that. We all understand. But when you get past the talent deal and you start talking about things that fit what you do, there's different ways to win. And for us, you know, that love of the game and that desire to be your best is really something we try to identify and circle in on in recruiting pretty quick.
When you look at your team this year, you know, it's for sure a process with this team because you're putting a new group together. You only have two guys returning. And their roles probably have changed, not maybe their roles in terms of their games, but their roles in terms of their position on the team. When you look at your team right now in this moment in time, what do you see?
We're definitely a work in progress, but there is a lot of optimism. I mean, I like my team. Some people might say, well, I hope you do, but that's not always true. You know, you get into some teams and what you thought and what you were trying to build, maybe it's going to have to go a second route, but not here. We're still kind of our original plan as we put this team together. We like our guys. I think we're talented. We're obviously young and inexperienced, but, you know, no excuse culture. You know, at what point are you not a freshman? You know, after you play 20 minutes and 20 games, are you still a freshman? Or at what point are you not inexperienced after you played X amount of games? So for us, it starts with the two returners that played minutes last year, Morrow and Kyler. And then our third returner, Avery Benson, is really the heart and soul of our team in terms of daily work ethic. And then the 10 new players, you know, featuring six or seven freshmen. But we are talented, Coach. We're good enough to play. We're good enough to go win a possession. Now, are we consistent enough to win a game? You know, that's what we're working really hard on right now.
Coach, when you practice, you know, you've come up with a lot of different people. Coach Knight, you know, obviously you worked for him. But you've coached with a lot of people. Coaches ask me this all the time around the state here in Indiana. You know, how much do you devote to defense? How much do you devote to offense? In your world, what do you consider yourself as a coach? More of a defensive guy, or do you just consider yourself a coach?
I mean, hopefully, above all, we're trying to win, you know. And I think what we do, and there's some exceptions to the rule, it's a pretty strong pattern. You know, I'd say from the first day of official practice until 2 or 3 days before that first game, so call it about 25, 26 practices, we're probably 60% defense and 40% offense. And then as we start getting closer to game time, we'll shift it. And I think in our typical practice, once the season starts, we're working, you know, probably 30% defense, 30% offensive breakdown, and the other 40, we're trying to get up and down and play live. But I think above all, if you had to characterize us, we were definitely a defensive mindset.
A defensive mindset and I would think a toughness mindset. But, you know, in specific, like those freshmen, and I, you know, like I was blown away by Terrence Shannon. His energy, his passion, and obviously Jamias, like you put a lot on those guys' plates. But the thing that blew my mind is how you guys go about correcting them and moving them forward. Explain where you got the mindset of coaching through tape, because your practices are high energy, high intensity, have great pace to them. Your staff is coaching them, but you don't get lost in it until you can sit with a guy really one-on-one and they can see it. Where'd you get that from?
Yeah, I think big look, Coach, it's more like, what do you value more? I mean, everybody loves all the above, but at some point, if you're going to be great at something, you got to zero in on something. I think less is more. You know, we'd much rather be a great team at this concept than an average team at 17 different things. So with that being said, I mean, we've always thought the kind of pace and intensity and, you know, getting after it every day in practice is maybe even a little bit more valuable than just, you know, execution. So, you know, the college game's 40 minutes. And our thought is if we could get the guys to go hard, you know, 40 minutes every day in an hour and a half practice, we're probably better off than being out there for 3.5 talking a lot. And then, you know, with the NCAA rules that allow you the 20 hours a week, we have plenty of time. And we try to do a lot of our teaching in the film room, both in team settings and in individual settings. But I think above all, the way to try to, I don't know if justify is the word, but explain it would be, we're really interested in pace and intensity in practice and trying to get into game mold versus, you know, working on something, talking about it, working on something, talking about it. We try not to stop practice for more than, you know, 15 to 25 seconds before we get back after it.
Coach, we have some questions here from listeners that Seth threw out. Hey, anybody wants to ask a question? So I'm going to ask you one. Coach, where'd your love of Whataburger come from?
Just growing up in Texas. Whataburger's 24 hours. We all know in this coaching lifestyle, I've had more 1 a.m. meals than I have 7 p.m. meals. So, and it's made to order. You know, people are going to tell you it's fast food, but it's really not.
It's great food done quickly.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. No, I understand, man. All right. Everything good with Chris Clark?
Yeah, he's off to a great start. You know, just like all these grad transfers, it's a huge adjustment. I don't think people understand how difficult it is to play somewhere 3-4 years, then all of a sudden come to a new program. And to us, the biggest thing we look for in those guys is just an unselfishness and a desire to try a new way. And last year with Matt and Tariq, you know, that plan was executed pretty well until about 15 seconds left in the game. But this year we have the same expectations for Chris and Holyfield. So he's off to a good start.
There you go, Seth.
Doc, you're unbelievable.
Why?
You went right to that. That's called the student section.
Yeah, I know, but these are good questions for Coach. Hey, Coach, how does an announcer get on your fireside chat?
Say it again, Coach. Sorry.
How does one get on your fireside chat segment?
You got to beg.
Just like everything in the world, there's a real political side. You know, it's
yeah.
But it's not a lot of blue ribbon, red tape. What do you say on that one? It's you know, it's pretty. It's pretty easy, even though it's political. I mean, you know, it might be a free T-shirt for Liz in the office, or maybe sure. a can of snuff for Sean Sutton. But there's a way to permeate the walls pretty quickly around here.
Yeah, you just have to be a little bit clever and smarter than the process, I assume. And
yes, sir.
Right? I mean, that's the way it rolls.
It's big. I mean, like the fireside chat. The funniest thing about the fireside chat, Coach, we did that. First of all, when I was there, we did it. Coach had a young man that was struggling academically, whose parents kind of approached him. Harry. And Harry, Coach challenged Harry, said, "You get straight A's, I'm going to have you on the fireside chat." So my man, Harry, what does he do? This is how big the fireside chat is. It can motivate a grade schooler to get straight A's, and he comes on the fireside chat. And by the way, the best advice Harry said is, you know what? You try to get these people that are going to give back the tickets because they can't get to a game or attend a certain number of games. You asked Harry flat out, spontaneous, Harry, what would you do to the older people that come to our games, can't come to games and get their tickets to other people? How would you incentivize it? And Harry said, I'd give them a coffee mug. Old people like coffee mugs.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Harry wasn't playing.
Man, see, Coach, that fireside chat, I think it, I personally, it's one of the more entertaining things, right? I mean, it's. But where did it come from? How'd you get it going?
You know where it came from. When we got here 3 years ago, one of our main objectives. I mean, right there at the top of the list, right under recruiting, probably was we had to try to connect with our student body, and we've got some of the best student fans in the country, evident by you know College Game Day a couple of years ago, or selling out games. On opening night, fellas, we had a legit sellout, and there was thousands of students outside that weren't able to get in. The 5,000-seat student section was filled, you know, 90 minutes before the game. So we've always had it here, but we're just looking for a consistency. And, you know, in today's world of, like, social media, nobody really ever is looking at the billboard anymore. There's just a way to get the information to the students. So the original idea for the Fireside Chat was like a weekly or every 10 days or so, just kind of communication. The whole thing is built around them. A lot of other people are enjoying it, which I'm glad, but it's basically a way to communicate with their student body in a format that they're going to see. You know, these kids are on their phones a lot more than they're, you know, reading an advertisement of a game.
It's unbelievable. I tell you, it is unbelievable. By the way, you are so good at it.
Yeah, you're great at it.
I mean, the stuff you pull out, the music, like the connecting with the cultural aspect of the people you're trying to reach is...
Last year at the Final Four, I was in one of those back hallways with the big flush carpet and all that, and the media people going back and forth with the golf carts, people that I grew up watching, and one person kind of grabbed me to the side, and I thought we were going to start talking about our players or coaching or something. And the guy goes, "Man, you do a great job." I said, "Well, thank you." He goes, no, that fireside chat.
That's what I'm talking about.
You know, it's not about our defense and rebounding.
No.
It's about our fireside chat.
Hell yeah, man. It's the important things. You'll learn. Yeah. I mean, you know, the important things are the media guys, what they think, you know, how they. Yeah.
And after he does the fireside chat, they get everyone in this room and screaming, you know, man, like it's like this office is screening office, and everyone watches it to make sure it's nothing wrong happened. That's the funniest thing.
That's awesome.
I mean, hey, Coach, you're pulling people in from the hallways. I mean, like it is unbelievable. How here's the last question, because I know you got to go. The race that you're running and the pace you're running this race. What's the thing? I mean, it's exhausting. What's the thing that keeps you going, and can you have balance and win today at the level you're trying to win at?
What keeps me going is my family, my three daughters and my fiance Randy, just trying to find that balance. And if you'd asked me that question, you know, pre-Jared Culver, I wasn't a big believer on balance and trying to win championships, but now I really am. You know, I've always said that a coach can learn as much from a player as a player can learn from a coach. I really believe that. And that was certainly the case with me and Culver. I mean, he was a guy that had balance just absolutely nailed with his faith and his family. But yet, you know, one of the most aggressive, addicted people to basketball I've ever seen. So I really I admired how he kind of balanced the faith and family and kind of enjoying life while being elite and while working on his craft as much as you possibly could. And so I'm not perfect at that, far from it. But I am trying to, you know, be the best dad I can be and, you know, here soon be the best husband I can be while still trying to compete and figure out a way to win a Big 12 game from time to time.
Great stuff, man. Appreciate your time.
Right there, man.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks a lot, man. Good luck to you, Coach. Thank you so much.
Man. I appreciate you.
Appreciate you guys. See you soon.
All right. Hey, you ever notice how when people end the interview, they're much more excited?
That's what we do.
Did you ever notice, like, hey, appreciate you guys. See you soon. I get that all the time on my radio show. Like,
you know, it's amazing, Dan, and this, you know, like, we get coaches to coach to talk.
Yes.
Like we're having a conversation.
Right.
They're not an interview. That's the magic of the world's greatest podcast.
All right. Let me ask you a question. A lot of great things happen in college basketball. All right. Already, we've seen Cole Anthony. We've seen Maxey. We've seen some flaws in some of our best team, but was there anything better yet than Andrew Jones of Texas dropping 20 in his return from leukemia? Anything better than that?
No. Let me tell you something. I did a Texas game when he was diagnosed and all that, and he came back, and you know, he was frail as could be. As genuinely nice a young man and real and sincere, and I can't even think of the adjectives to describe him. And to see him fight through all that and to do what he did the other day, I just can't even imagine a better story all season in college basketball.
I know. I know. I mean, it is amazing. And, you know, you said this, and this is something that I wish people understood. There are two things, Seth, and I'm going to get your reaction to both. One that you said and the other that I saw yesterday. Kentucky beats, who'd they beat? Michigan State, right? Maxey.
Oh, I know what you're going to talk about here. This is great.
Yeah, Maxey has this great game, and there's a picture of him and somebody else going to class at 9 o'clock in the morning after they got back at 4:30.
Quickly.
Yeah, Emmanuel Quickly. So they get back at 4:30 in the morning, and yet there's a picture. It drives me bat blank crazy that people in our own profession, people that played college basketball, say there's no student in student athlete. What a bunch of crap. And then the other thing, Seth, and I comment on is you said this. You put this in a Twitter post. What nice kids play college basketball, man. What great kid. I mean, I know we focus on the knuckleheads when they become knuckleheads, and you know, you got thousands of kids playing, one's going to be a knucklehead, but overall, what great kids are playing college hoops, man?
The quality of young person playing college basketball with the microscope that they're under today, with the goals and dreams that they're trying to create for themselves and their teams. Because let's face it, there's an incredible amount of pressure for an elite player that's chasing that dream. It's not, he's not chasing it just for him. He's chasing it for his family. It becomes a generational change. And these guys, and there's so much pressure put on them, and not pressure in a bad way, but you know, they want to do it. Their parents wanted to do it. And let's face it, a lot of these parents have invested a lot in their kids throughout the course of their careers coming up. The manner in which they handle it, the smiles on their face, watching Tyrese Maxey play and the smile on his face, seeing that at 4:30, they land at 4:30 in the morning. And those kids are on their way to a early morning class. And what a message that sends, because you know what, there is, and you know, people say there's no such thing as a student athlete. Like, you know what, going to class and bettering yourself and being in a collegiate environment, that helps whether you graduate or not, that experience helps you grow in so many different ways. And we're seeing like the very best of young people in college basketball. I really believe that.
I do too.
I really believe that.
I do. And you know, so often it gets lost. And so often all we talk about is how everybody's a victim or they need more and more. Hey, look, that's fine. You want to give more, give more. You want to give less, whatever you want to do. But man, there are some fascinating stories. All right. I want you to rank for me right now, this moment, Kentucky 1 to 10. Can they win a national championship on a scale of 1 to 10? I'm going to go Kentucky, Michigan State, Kansas, and Duke. Kentucky first, 1 to 10.
Yeah, I would say there were 7. Vic Richards,
are they a favorite right now?
The other day. No, I think they're better than 50. You know, I think they're better than, look, there's only about 15 teams that probably are in that conversation right now. Could they be one of them? Sure. Nick Richards, if he defends and is as active as he was the other day, and then he just makes one or two of those little jump hooks at the rim, with the development of those young guys and the way college basketball is played, you know, the guard play, I think is really going to be good. Yeah, they're going to be in the conversation. And I'd say, you know, what is 65-70%, which is a high percentage at this moment in time.
What about Duke?
Yeah, Duke's an interesting one because you know, their DNA now is 100% on the defensive end. And like you think about how they opened up how they got back and won that game. I mean, Kansas took a lead. And then what they do? Ball pressure. Trey Jones turns people over, gets in passing lanes, gets out in transition. If they can improve in the half court, play through Vernon Carey on the block a little bit more, especially on the right block so he can get to his right shoulder. And I do worry about if they're going to make enough jump shots. And I worry if they're going to have to rebound the ball on the defensive end. But I thought they were really good defensively. I'd say slightly lower than Kentucky.
What about Michigan State?
Michigan State, you know, Kyle Arns, he was only back in practice about a week. I think he'll make a difference in that team. I like the kid Hall. I think he's going to get better. I think that Rocket Watts has got to shoot it a little bit better. I thought that his left hand is so high on the ball when he shoots it. There's so much drag on the ball. Yeah, I think, and you know, I would say I put him in the same category as Kentucky. They didn't play well, and Kentucky played really well, and they were a play or two away, and a Tyrese Maxey big three away from winning that game. If they won that game, we'd have a totally different image of them.
Do you think
so, like, it's November, man? It's November. Like, I don't overreact to November.
I do. So that makes us a perfect balance. Like, I've said on my radio show, Michigan State is nowhere near when they had Miles Bridges and a bunch of bigs, and I don't even think they're near.
It was college basketball.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, I think this season, and I'm looking forward to watching Baylor practice today in Alaska. By the way, it's pitch black outside right now in Alaska. It's only 6:48. I wake up early in the morning to do the podcast because you're my guy. And you know what? The world's greatest podcast. Time change has no impact on
none.
None whatsoever. We just wake up and we knock it out. But I'm not sure. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing Baylor. I'm looking forward to see Washington. As I go through this and I start watching scores and start watching video on teams, I mean, these teams that are supposed to be better teams, like Ohio State's supposed to be pretty good, all right? And Cincinnati's a pretty good team. They struggled. You know, Virginia scored 47 points and one held the team 37 points. You know, you start going around the country and saying, all right, Georgetown, I'm not saying they're an elite team, but they were down to Mount St. Mary's at the half by double digits. I'm waiting to see, like, what team and what players are going to emerge. Because, like, no one is jumping off the page. They will emerge. Cole Anthony emerged the other day. Tyrese Maxey emerged the other day. Someone is going to emerge. People said Baylor looked absolutely terrific, made 18 threes. They've gone from a power inside, long athletic team to a team that can also shoot it. But, you know, Kansas, I thought, was going to be the best team in the country. They have a lot of ifs. I don't think there's a team in the country right now that doesn't have ifs.
I think, you know, I watched two teams play that I think are pretty good. Indiana. I mean, I'm here in Indiana. Indiana and Purdue. I did not know Jahad Proctor. I think that's how you say his first name. Did you know this kid from High Point?
Oh, the kid from High Point. Averaged like 19 points a game at High Point. Yeah.
I mean, he comes out last night, drops 26 against Link.
Purdue, right?
Yeah, for Purdue, Link Darner's team. And, you know, basically everybody but Klein and Edwards back, which is big. I think this, just after a quick week, and I overreact, Seth. I'm one of those guys that on Monday I overreact to everything NFL, and I'm going to overreact in basketball. But what I saw out of some Big Ten teams, Ohio State had a tough win. Illinois struggled like crazy. Michigan looked too loose to me. I thought Michigan State looked awful. I did. I thought they looked awful, Seth. And I don't say that about Michigan State ever. I just didn't think they looked like a good basketball team. I think the Big Ten's going to get a little sexy. I don't know if it's going to be good basketball. But I feel like there's going to be a lot of teams. Minnesota crushed their opponent opening night. I think there's going to be a lot of teams competing in the Big Ten. And I got to say, unless North Carolina is just going to be better than everybody with Cole Anthony, I wasn't all that shot in the backside with Duke. I thought they're all right, but they're not.
And let me ask you this, like North Carolina, Cole Anthony, I mean, they had a freshman have 34 they at home, home opener. Baylor against Notre Dame, I mean, they were trailing a good portion of that game.
Right.
So, like, you know, we're talking about, you know, North Carolina, Cole Anthony. Now, Cole Anthony will capture the imagination of college basketball. There's no doubt about it, because that's what happens. Yeah. Is he the next Trae Young? I mean, you know, in terms of just turning the game a little bit upside down. I don't know. But, I mean, that could happen. But I don't look and see anyone right now. And look, it's going to change, and it's early. That will blow me away. Now, I'm going to see Baylor practice today. And we're up here for Baylor Washington, the Armed Forces Classic game, which is, to me, one of the best things that I've been involved with. This afternoon, just so you know, say a little prayer for me. I'm going to go do a fitness test with the troops in about 40 minutes.
Don't they know?
And at this body. I mean, you know, you could tell I'm just going to kill this fitness.
You look like a thumb.
I don't look like a thumb. My head looks like a thumb. I mean, I'm svelte now. I'm finally too.
All right, stop.
Odds
what
are
what
I will
is the
something terribly?
What do you have any idea what the fitness test is? Because I'm going to do it after my radio show. You tell me what it is. What is it? What are we doing?
I don't know. I'll find out. I don't know. I'm going to find out. You can't do it. You're on one leg.
That's true. The hip replacement. Hey, by the way,
come back. By the way, I can tell by your voice.
Yeah.
You're making a comeback there.
Yeah, I'm much better than I was. Much more energy. I do have to say my Twitter account got compromised. So if you could follow me on @DanDockage5, I got 160,000 followers wandering around with nobody to lead them because Twitter somehow said my account had been compromised and I can't use my old one. I'm efforting.
So but now you want people to at you?
Not really. I'm actually like not having Twitter. Very much
right.
The last few days.
I can understand.
It's
all been right,
very
so here, here's the deal.
Yeah.
Baylor has a chance to be really good. I mean, think about last year, and like him, don't like him, all right, makes no difference. Scott Drew, what he's done to Baylor is pretty crazy. Now, he's always been big and athletic and long. Now, this is an interesting stat. They have four former players that were not even ESPN top 100 guys that are playing in the NBA right now.
Wow.
He's redshirted almost 3/4 of the guys that have been in their program. They have taken a bunch of transfers, but like you know, last year when I had the injury, and let's face it, Tristan Clark was having a monster year in the Big 12. 6'10", 245, rebounded, scoring. And, you know, they went through so many injuries. He went with four-guard offense. And all of a sudden, this guy Jared Butler emerged. And, you know, like, you know, the last 20 games, averaged 30 points a game. And Mark Vidal, I mean, just got – he seems like he rebounds every missed shot. He's a 6'5 power forward. You got transfer from Auburn, Damian Mitchell, who's a really, really quick, explosive guard. Transfer from UNC Asheville, Massey Teague, who's really, really a good offensive player. I mean, this game in the Armed Forces Classic is going to be an interesting game because on Washington, on the other side, you got like Isaiah Stewart. You know, they got two top five in the country, ESPN top five recruits, Jaden McDaniels and Isaiah Stewart, I mean, who can flat out go. Kwadi Green is eligible for Washington. I think it's going to be a really compelling game to watch. Really talented young players versus a more mature team. Baylor was picked second in the Big 12, extremely athletic, shooting the ball to the three, but also has legitimate size up front. Two teams that play zone, but different zones that kind of push you out, and their point of pickup is higher, and they distort passing lanes. I think we got a big-time game tomorrow night here in beautiful Alaska.
I'm anxious to see Kwadi Green. I thought Kwadi Green was going to be a really good scorer. I did. I
had a great kid. He's a ball guard, right? I mean, like,
yes.
Saw him in the Bahamas.
Yes.
He's a guy that has to be freed up and more of a scorer than a playmaker, for sure.
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's good. I wonder this. What in the hell determines who gets a waiver to play and who doesn't? I mean,
Now that we should do a whole podcast.
That's a whole show, right? I don't like. I'm looking in the Big Ten world. Wisconsin wants Micah Potter. Izzo wants Hauser. I don't know. The season started. Neither of those guys are cleared. Quad A Green does, and a variety of others do. I just don't understand who gets cleared and who doesn't. I don't think you and I are going to have the answer. And I don't think anybody has the answer.
I mean, Quad A Green. I mean, he got a waiver. It's not like he went closer to home. He's a Philly dude.
Right.
He went closer to home.
Closer to the Pacific.
I mean, it is so arbitrary that it's almost, I wouldn't say frightening, but frustrating. I think that there's a real issue out there because, you know, are people getting favors? Because the decision is made by a group of athletic administrators. It could be a different group for each kid that is appealing his eligibility, and they don't have a set criteria. So here's the deal. They're either going to have to do one of two things. No one is eligible and everyone sits, or everyone gets a one-time waiver like they do in other sports.
Right.
Now that will create basically handshake lines. Oh, by the way, you're not getting enough shots. I'll tell you, when you come to our place, you know, you get all the shots you want. It's good to see you. And people will legitimately be recruiting guys right off of someone else's team. Mid-major freshmen and sophomores have no chance of finishing where they started. No chance. No chance. If you're a big-time mid-major player and you blow up after your freshman year, there's no way you're staying in the program you're at. It's just the way it is. It's almost like mid-majors will become the G League for the high majors. How's that work for you?
I think it's already happening. I mean, you look at Gary Waters at Cleveland State. I mean, he lost three guys. I mean, he said to hell with it. I'm getting out. It already is. Like, I look back, we won the MAC in 2000, and there's no way the kid who was the player of the year, Anthony Stacy, would have been with me. I had to redshirt him for an injury my first year. No way. He would have been at Ohio State, Michigan, Purdue, Indiana, wherever. I can't stand it. I cannot stand it for mid-majors. But the truth of the matter is, nobody cares about mid-majors. The only thing we care about, quite frankly, is the blue bloods. I get it, but it's a far, far, far uneven playing field, and that's not the way it should be. It's not. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's not the way it should be.
You know what? Here's the deal. People turn around and say, well, you know, mid-major coach gets an opportunity to coach at a high major and get more exposure,
yeah,
make more money, do all this other stuff. I mean, that's the comparison.
Every
job I change, I had a significant buyout. The thing is, with the players, there will be no buyout.
Yeah, this is good.
Coaching mid-major basketball will be very, very difficult because you're going to be reinventing your team to better you do better job. You do evaluating.
I'll say something else. Nobody's going to agree with this. All right. Nobody's going to agree with this. And I don't know if Kwade Green or Micah Potter or the Hauser kid can go to the NBA or not. And you may disagree with this too, but I took transfers and they all had to sit out a year. And every kid told me the best year they ever had was the sit out year. They got their academics in order. They increased their maturity, their body. I get it. We all say it's the worst thing in the world to have to sit out, and that's fine. Maybe it is. But every kid that I know that transferred after their career was over and they look back on it like, man, I got a lot out of that sit out year. So, you know, whatever it is, but that's not what we were here to talk about. But the truth of the matter is you do gain from sitting out. Like, where's everybody want to go? Let me ask you a question. If you're 18 to 22 and you're not going to the NBA, realistically, why the hell would you ever want to leave college? Where do you want to go? What do you want to do? College is the best. And if you don't like college, that's on you. So where are you trying to go? So stay an extra year, sit out a year, become bigger, stronger, better. Then when you're 30, you'll go, man, that was a great experience I had. Doesn't mean you shouldn't get paid. Doesn't mean you shouldn't get more. I'm just saying it. Great experience. Hey, I want to thank everybody for listening. You all have made this very popular. Make sure you go to iTunes, Spotify, wherever you download your podcast. And Seth and I are going to be together this coming Tuesday and Wednesday in studio. So catch us in there. And as always, if you're going to rate us, do the damn right thing and just give us 5 stars because you know you love the podcast. Seth, great job today. Chris Beard was fantastic, and we'll come back at some point. You know what we got to do? At some point, we got to get your new sidekick, LaFonso, on here. We got to get LaFonso on here.
Yeah, LaFonso.
Yeah.
LaFonso. The problem is we'll both feel terrible about ourselves because LaFonso is the nicest human being in the world, and then all of a sudden, we'll do the podcast, look in the mirror, and we'll go, like, seriously? I don't even like myself.
Seth, I have...
That's how nice he is.
I had a goal when I was in college to get Steve Alford to chew tobacco one time, and I did it. I now have an adult goal, which is to make Fonz irritated and angry. I think we can do it. I think between your personality and my personality, we can get Fonz to act like he's back on the
sideways.
Court. Yeah, I think we can.
All right. We'll work on it. You
Let's
got it,
do
brother.
It. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.